Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence Season 3. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host of VFE. And today's guest, I've been following her work for a few years now, and very captivating, specifically how she is intentional working with leaders, teachers, changing practices, expanding various instructional as well as leadership methods in what I call this AC stage of education. We have had so many offline conversations. I said to myself, well, we need to get this on VFE because not only am I writing down notes for myself, I'm like, my audience is missing out on the expertise that Danelle brings. I'm just really, truly enjoying seeing the work that she's doing, leading across the country. Home base is in California. Very jealous at this time, Danelle, because it's getting cold here. You know, we got the space heaters out. I brought out the heated blanket. So I have to come back in. I'm going to have to go back out to California to come see you. But it is such an honor to have Danelle Almarez here on VFE, where she is the Chief Impact Officer of Innovate Ed, where we'll get to expand more on that. But Danelle, good morning. It's late morning here, but early morning in California. So thank you for joining us so early. Welcome to VFE.
Oh, thank you for having me. And just like you said, Michael, we've had so many great conversations via Zoom, and we said, oh, we should have recorded that. So thank you for having me to share. And thank you for being a person out there changing education. The change that we need is definitely going to be a collaborative effort, as we just talked about. We need all the players at the table to actually make some great change because it's coming.
Absolutely. And now you hit upon it where I think now it becomes more, I like to say, strategic imperative, where we have to work in this collaborative context, this integrated dynamic form that is the outlier to our old practices, which are siloed in domain expertise around research and leadership. We'll get into that. So much to get into, but I want to get into the first question because I want to hear what your song is in the ecosystem, because everybody across the country, they know your work, whether it's regarding continuous improvement, pedagogical effectiveness in the context of building practitioner capacity, leadership impact and capabilities, or just development holistically in itself. What song describes your work in the education ecosystem?
I would say Born to Fly, Sarah Evans. Because I think children are born curious. They are born to fly and just excel. And unfortunately, we kind of clip their wings and put them in a cage for 12 years. And then we wonder why they're not singing. They're not excited. They're not happy. And I really think that we need to get to a place where children love school. They really want to go and have a sense of belonging rather than constantly trying to fit in. So that would be, I think, the song that would encapsulate for me what we need to think about when we think about the education ecosystem, because it's an ecosystem. It's part of the community, and that we're all on the same page. Parents, educators, mentors, coaches, we all want the best for kids. And so we need to rethink that. But yeah, definitely Born to Fly.
I love that, right? And you stated a sentiment that resonated with me, Danelle, is clip their wings. And when I think about that, Danelle, I always think about how the system is designed, where innovation, creativity, student imagination is clipped because of, I like to say, those static bureaucratic constructs that does not facilitate imagination. And you hit upon it where now when that is stifled, right? Yeah. When that curiosity is stifled, belonging, inclusion, authentic engagement becomes stifled as well. So really love that our children are born to fly. And I think that we have this reset in the AC stage of education, the fourth industrial revolution, where now we have that critical learning during the DC stage of education, but how do we now expand it into the AC where students are born to fly. And I know you have been facilitating that for leaders and teachers across the country through your current work within Innovate Ed as the Chief Impact Officer. So the work that you're underscoring within the ecosystem, again, is a strategic imperative, is a necessity in the AC stage of education after COVID-19. But in a high-level overview or an abstraction of the work that you're doing, how are you assisting leaders and classroom practitioners to shift their practices to be in alignment with the new demands of this instructional paradigm of the AC stage of education? But more importantly, going back to your sentiment before, how is your work leading teachers so that now belonging, inclusion, and cultural engagement and agency is underscored in all classrooms?
So one of the things is just clarity and alignment. We have to stop drinking Red Bull and we need to sit back and have a real hot cup of tea and have some major discussions about the sunsetting of the age of knowledge. Ooh. You know, my mom said, you will go to college, you will get an education. I was the first one to go to college because knowledge was the holy grail. You know, when to go to school, get a good job, right? And so first of off is we need to sit down and talk about the kids. We need to talk about the learners and how we need to shift from a compliance world to more of a, what do skills do these kids need to survive in this AI age? And it's some hard conversations and a lot of discussion around compliance and the things that we feel like we have to do. We often find that some of it's self-inflicted. Let's stop for a minute, take a deep breath, because the system we have is going to keep perpetuating the same results. That's not anything new, but can we reimagine the North Star? Can we reimagine what we think education should be? We built this system. We constructed it. We put this Rubik's Cube together. We can take it apart now and say it's not serving the purpose anymore. So really, what is our purpose of education? What's the purpose of school? Once we get that defined and we really come up with kind of a really great inquiry question of what are we trying to answer, whether it's, you know, how do we begin to have students come to school and feel what we want them to feel and feel supported, and then leveraging AI. Anytime we can leverage AI or innovation, let's leverage it. Now that we've redefined what we want, now let's leverage the tools we have and use them. And then last of all, build capacity. I'm a big proponent of the lead from the middle. And that's how I get teachers' voice on board on a regular basis. Is some schools have had 7 principals in 3 years.
Yeah.
How do teachers sustain that? It can't be. So now if I've got a little cohort of site leadership team of 10 or 12, they're now saying, congratulations, Dr. Connor, that you won the lotto and you're moving to Hawaii. But we want to be on the interview panel because we want to be sure that someone that comes on board with us is going to support what we've been working for the last 3 years. I don't do any work for short term. It's 3 to 5 years. I really want to build those leaders. Also, they're the ones that once they're on the site leadership team and they understand the inquiry process, they're being promoted to principal, to coaches, to directors. We're not doing a great job at building that teacher pipeline and leaving them out of the mix. And then the students really talking to the kids about what's going well, what isn't, what classes do you feel that belonging, that curiosity is nurtured rather than stifled. I feel like we do a lot of surveys and we put panels, but are we really listening? Are we creating change? Because I've had some kids, they'll come sit with me and they're like, oh, are you going to be another person that asks us questions, but then nothing happens? And I said, I'm going to do my best. I'm going to do my best to make sure your voice is heard all the way up so that we can create change. But I can see that they're frustrated at conveying their unhappiness. I mean, if they're not telling this by 27% chronic absentee rate across the United States, if we're not listening to that fact, then how are we going to be fostering that culture of collaboration when kids are not even coming to school?
Yeah. And Danelle, excellent point. I as you were unpacking your answer, there was about 5 meta thoughts, right? And that was compelling, but there was one that I want you to unpack for me. This is more of a sub question. You said sunsetting the age of knowledge, right? And I think that's so critical when we think about that, because we have been there's this hyperperseveration, i.e., through the design and construct of the system, where it focuses on college ready. Knowledge demands that each quote unquote structure, i.e., age graded classrooms. But as we're starting to move towards or really start to be immersed in the AC stage of education, I like to say to be more in the lines of the development of the skills that are needed. Career ready, digital ready. And it's that old mind frame that this knowledge-based economy still lives. Unpack that for us, because it's a shift in mindset where we are moving away from knowledge creation, knowledge demands, to now these skills that are integrated for career readiness and digital readiness.
I have to give total credit to Travis Allen from the Human Intelligence Movement. I couldn't quite put my fingers on it, but he talks about agriculture. 85% of jobs were back in the day because we had to sustain feed ourselves. Machinery came in. Then knowledge became the pillar of what we were trying to do as a society. Now that we have AI, knowledge is no longer, it isn't the way the teacher kept was the keeper of the knowledge, and we had to go to school and listen to them so that we could understand. We have that at our fingertips now. What I think we're moving into is that those human skills, those collaborative skills, those, problem solving, curiosity, we need those to flourish more because knowledge has not become the top-notch importance.
And Danelle, very captivating with that, right? Because there was a study that came out, the Morgan Stanley study, that specifically stated because of the revolution of artificial intelligence, machine learning, and automation, knowledge-based jobs, 15% of knowledge-based jobs in a variety of different industries will be eliminated. Thank you for pointing that out. But when we think about this now, right, and you talked about AI, leveraging AI innovation as tools to create what we call a purpose for school. But now school demographics are radically changing. We have to start concretizing these methods and ideologies of culturally responsive methods because of that. Just to give you a prime example, Latino students within the past, I believe, 10 years have increased by five, I'm sorry, 5 years, increased by 5 million, with an estimate of 44 million by 2028. Cultural agency, and I want to create level set for my audience today. Cultural agency is defined as empowering student voice beyond the surface level approaches of inclusion, right? We can talk about, yeah, we're including students, but are we really getting to the genetic threads of the system around inclusion? Now, I want you, Danelle, for my audience, to find student voice from the context of this level set definition of cultural agency. And how should our practitioners root this purposeful engagement in their pedagogical repertoire?
I'm going to give you an example from Zambia and Nigeria. So they've kind of skipped over the whole single school room, single room schoolhouse. They didn't have buildings. What they're doing now is bringing the community together. They're building literacy for everyone in the community for about 2 hours using artificial intelligence, getting everyone reading, because sometimes there's not even anyone literate in the community. How do you begin? So, with partners like Hewlett Packard, 1 million teachers, we've gotten them technology and artificial intelligence to help those literacy skills. Then they spend the rest of the day as a community alongside the students, the facilitators. They don't even call them students, they call them learners, facilitators. They work on United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. How are we going to get clean water? How are we going to be create some crops for sustainable food? It's not going to be helpful just to sit them in a circle and give them knowledge when they have bigger problems to solve. And so now talk about agency. Kids are part of the solution that they are sitting with the adults, and as a community, they're coming up with how might we? how might we make our own waters clean? Maybe we need to stop washing our clothes in there, right? Because the soap that flows down, they brainstorm all these ideas. So they spend 2 hours doing the knowledge piece because knowledge is still important. It's just not the primary goal. The primary goal is how are we going to solve some of these problems that we have in our community and have our students be part of that. Talk about feeling fulfilled, feeling belonging. I'm helping to solve the problems of my community, of my family.
Mm-hmm. And Danelle, I would love for you to expand. I love how, before we go back to a sub question, I love how you brought up the sustainable development goals, because a lot of the work that I'm doing in the UAE, GCC, international area is always focused around their broad plan. As an example, in the UAE, they have the UAE 2031 plan, where it's underscored systemically and coherently with the sustainable development goals in each of that addressing verticals for this level of clarity and coherence that you talk about. But thank you for highlighting that knowledge is still a focus, but there's a de-emphasis with it. But I want you to expand upon AI and technology. And as we move into this integration of artificial intelligence, various technological tools within the classrooms, I feel that there's a partial discussion, partial strategy being implemented as opposed to this comprehensiveness in the context of what you always talk about, clarity and alignment. How do we achieve that clarity and alignment with regards to AI, emergent technologies, various assistive solutions in our classrooms? And then moreover, how does leadership lead from an instructional leadership lens regarding AI in the classroom?
Great question. So one of the ways that I've been helping teachers tackle this enormous, where do we begin, is we just start with an inquiry question. Mm-hmm. Start with what problem are we trying to solve? And then the last stage of the setting up your inquiry question is there an AI companion or tool that can help with this? What it does is it gives the artificial intelligence relevance. Mm-hmm. I think of back in the day when we did the apps, remember we thought Apple and all the apps were going to save education, but without some kind of relevance of why are we doing this, it seems like kind of this neat, sexy tool, but we're not quite sure how to use it. So there really has to be a purpose. And so that's one of the places we start. We don't start with, hey, let me show you the 10 AI tools that I think might be helpful for you in the classroom. It starts with the inquiry question. And then once we do that, then we start brainstorming, what are those AI tools that might be helpful in this situation? Sometimes the answer is there isn't. Mm-hmm. Right. But mm-hmm. in many cases, there's something that will make things a little easier. Or, for example, the other thing is I created an AI bot that was featured in Forbes around the Schools on the Move framework, because I think first we need to have adults experience it. They need to experience, what does personalization look like? It looks, you can ask any question you want without judgment. And really understand, how do you create innovation and change in a sustainable way? I can on the back end see the questions they're asking. So as a facilitator and a coach, I go in already knowing what are the questions that they were too embarrassed to ask in a group setting. Mm-hmm. I can see what they really want to know. What problems are they having? What do I do with, you know, these the teachers that aren't willing to jump on board with our inquiry question? What do I do when the district brings an initiative in that doesn't align with our inquiry question? I can see all that on the back end. So I think them experience it themselves, and then attaching it to the inquiry question gives it that relevance that they need to see how it can be helpful to them.
Really love your response, Danelle. And to my audience, please, that is a response. I always say this in every episode. We're in season 3 now, Danelle. And every episode I say this. We use VFE as an asynchronous professional learning tool for leaders, practitioners, educators around the different verticals within the ecosystem, right? And your answer for AI is one of those answers that they should be able to, our audience, be able to play again, right? Because there was a lot of strategies that was embedded within that answer. Really loved how you talk about start with an inquiry question. I always think of now when you start with that inquiry question is that reverse engineering of starting with that question and working backwards. And I really loved how you stated that maybe that tool is not a good companion for these students or, you know, this pedagogical strategy where you have to be strategic with the AI. Love the AI relevance, but the intentionality that you highlighted explicitly, implicitly, I reference back to adult learning sciences, right? Andragogy, where we have to differentiate our capacity and capability support for the variety of, I like to say adult learners, practitioners, leaders, on this continuum of the adoption of AI. I like to reference it is tier one, tier two, and tier three, right? We have tier one, here's the AI, this is the solution. Tier two in the context of individualized and instruction, whether it be in a small group manner or one-on-one. And then we have some of our leaders and teachers who need that intense support in a tier three alignment. So pedagogy and andragogy, very similar verticals, I should be able to state it. But I really love how you state, and I've heard you state this, that leadership should be a shared entity, right? Mm-hmm. And I think of this beyond kind of like the, I like to say, BC stage of education, distribute leadership model. Yes, we want to be able to distribute leadership amongst our stakeholders, amongst our constituents, leaders and practitioners. But I look at your answer that from the shared entity of this AC stage lens, where now it's around shared leadership. I think of distribute leadership, yes, but to go deeper with distribute leadership is to share leadership where voices are underscore agency, this design thinking principle around empathy, this ethnographic approach where leadership now comes from the variety of different verticals within the ecosystem. But now, how do we lever this sheer notion of leadership within this continuous learning cycle, continuous improvement cycle process? And then also, how do we get there in the context of elevating instruction with this common language around innovation and excellence? I know that's a mouthful, Danelle, but
yeah.
Again, I want to be able to unpack your leadership expertise around this area for my audience.
So I think just change in mindset is where you start. Schools are hierarchies. The state says we have to do this. The district says we have to do this. My principal says I need to do this. And we really want to move to what we call huddles, huddling up in a situation of co-leading and co-learning. There are no experts, myself included. I come in with what I know, but there's always someone that tried something else. But we need to get to a point where we're really listening and sitting in a huddle situation with just that curiosity, the feeling of, you know, belonging, be kind and be present. That would be the other thing I would say is we're so distracted by the 100 things we have to do. We need to be present. But getting that shift in mindset around co-leading and co-learning is probably the first like nut to crack. Like that takes almost a year just to change the thought of you are no longer the teacher and student. You're now the mentor and the learners, right? We're just here together in this space, coming up with an inquiry question of what question are we trying to answer? And it's amazing what happens when you really open up the floodgates of all the ideas and where they can come from, including the kids. The kids come up sometimes with the greatest ideas of how do we create this change? Once you get everyone on board, then the ship starts to row. You're all rowing in the same direction. And the things that happen and the ideas that come about are absolutely amazing. But that hierarchy of, you know, we have four PDs, you have to come, everyone's getting the same thing. You know, it used to work. There were experts because they'd been teaching for 20, 30 years. We're in a moment in time where there are no experts. We're all co-leading and co-learning this, you know, COVID, after COVID world. I think one of the mistakes we made was we learned a lot over COVID. My sister's a nurse, and I often tell her, you had to take on more than I can imagine. She says, Danelle, but they prepare us for this day. I think teachers are the ones that shifted more than anyone ever imagined. No one ever said to me in my credentialing program, like, be prepared. You might have to be teaching 5-year-olds how to read via Zoom. And so I think we try to go real quick back to the old ways. And that wasn't the right move. We needed to learn from what we, because there will be another, pandemic. There will be another fire that wipes out all the schools, and we have to pivot. So we need to start rethinking of more geographically fluid education as work is hybrid. School needs to be as well. But that part about co-leading and co-learning is where you have to start coming up with what are the challenges we have as a whole group. And then taking them on as a whole group, which requires the system can't be so tight that there's no room for innovation. And that's a huge stumbling block. Even when I get teachers on board and they're excited, the rest of the system is so stifling, their wings are clipped, right? I want them to fly, but there can't be a system so tight that there's no room for any new ideas, new innovations, new technology. And so we have to rethink that.
Yeah, we have to rethink the operating model, the tenets, the apparatuses that are embedded within that. Because as you stated, the system, the tenets embedded within the operating model systems are very tightly coupled to the point where it's trying to plug in innovation, trying to plug in AI creativity, synergy, in this peg that it doesn't fit, right? But I love how you say that. We have to create huddles. And when I think of huddles, it is now deconstructing systems, siloed systems, where now it becomes interdependent. And there's that co-leading, that co-learning from each other, where it becomes dynamic as opposed to static, right? John Taylor's control and demand versus Peter Drucker's knowledge work. Very good. I love the huddle aspect of it because I think that if we huddle around these bold inquiries, we'll be able to accelerate once we're all going on that same direction. That goes into this next question where, again, the huddles, the interdependent co-leading and co-learning from each other, the now ability to create this flexibility around innovation. I always love when you say this, Danelle, clarity of focus. Now, Michael Smoker, I mean, we talk about Smoker's work around focus, right? That is a oldie but goodie, but it's still relevant, whether BC stage of education, DC stage of education, or AC stage. But we know that clarity of focus is very hard when it comes to these change processes for systemic steps of improvement. Now, underscoring this clarity of focus phrase for my audience, right? We start talking about AI, we start talking about leadership development, we started talking about practitioners having flexibility to be innovative around inquiry-based questions. How do we establish this clarity of focus mindset within our practitioners, within our leaders, around instructional coherence with AI tools or even traditional analog pedagogical coherence in the context of vertical and horizontal alignment?
Well, I think it usually starts at you have to have a superintendent that is willing to be open-minded, right? Jerry Almendarez is, at Santa Ana, he is one of my favorites, right? Because he really has, said, let's get together. So he's really brought the board along. He's brought community in. He's really listening to the kids. I think it has to start there with talking about openly without judgment. It's not a finger pointing. This is just a moment to say what is working and what isn't without any judgment or blame. And that building trust, you can't do any of this until people really trust. Because, like I said, even when I have teachers on board, they're excited, they're afraid. What if they come
Absolutely.
in and I'm doing this building classroom thing, Danelle, that we've decided we want to try? And, the superintendent walks in and isn't happy that the class is so loud. Right? You really have to have that from the top up to the bottom down. And so this is one thing I find that's very broken in the education system. It's those feedback loops. Information often comes down from the hierarchy, but how are we getting information from the bottom up? How are we listening to the students to say on a regular basis, not just a one-time end of the year, you know, really listening to what is working for you, what, you know, having expos of learning, having kids display their learning in different ways, like Spaces EDU does a whole thing on portfolios, which causes us to rethink grades, testing, right? The gradual release model worked for a very long time because kids came to school on a regular basis and the teacher was the holder of the knowledge. Gradual release isn't working because 27% of the kids are chronically absent. That's not going to work. So how do we reshift? And it normally starts with, like I said, just listening to their pain points. What challenge do they want to take on? Because I can tell them this worked over here. And this is another thing I see, you know, district folks come from one school district to another and immediately they want to impose whatever they did in the other district because it worked. It only worked because you built it together. If you come in and nobody likes to be told what to do, no one wants to be told you're doing it wrong. The other thing I would think we have to help with is helping teachers understand that what they've been doing for 20 years is not wrong.
Right, right.
It's not wrong because they really get offended when I'm like, we have to rethink. And they're like, Danelle, I've been doing this for 30 years. So you're telling me for 30 years I've been doing this all wrong? And it's no, things have changed. Our clientele has changed. Our communities have changed. Some parents are hybrid work. So you can't get upset when they want to take their child with them to Tahiti for 2 weeks. We have to find a way to provide that education because who are we to say, no, you can't go, right? That's a lifelong experience for that child. And so I think all of those little, it's like the little wheels are interconnected and we have to begin to think about how are we going to rethink all of it? Because where do you start? There's lots of golden threads. You know, I start with leading from the middle and building teachers up, but grading is another one, you know, assessment or testing, you know, all of those things, even how we pay schools for ADA. Like we don't want kids coming to school sick. So all of those components, I think, are little golden threads that we have to rethink as a society of what is the purpose of schooling? What is the purpose of education at this moment?
Absolutely. And Danelle, I'm a big fan of Jerry. Shout out to Jerry Almadares out in Santa Ana. He is one of the leaders leading this work. And to my audience, if you want to go and see a great leader leading this, exactly what Danelle was highlighting, please visit Santa Ana and Jerry, who's doing a wonderful job out there. But Danelle, your answer is truly captivating because I love the example that you provided for rethinking education. I think this should be the tagline for education when we start to think about what reimagination looks like, what rethinking of this model looks like, because you said it, you contextualized it perfectly. Our clientele has changed. We would not, if any other industry, any other product, we cannot have the same product from 30 years ago. I apologize, Danelle. I'm not going to go put in a quarter and 25 cents, you know, at the phone booth to make a call when I have this. The clientele has changed. The time has changed. Rotary phones. I put a rotary phone in front of my son. Very smart. He didn't even know what to do with it. The clientele has changed. Yes, what you did in the past is not wrong, but is it in alignment to the attributes, the dispositions, the characteristics, the needs of the new clientele, i.e. Generation Z, Generation Alpha? Thank you. And I really loved how you contextualized the gradual release model. So true. When we were in school, Danelle, it was strategic compliance. I'm going in there to get the A so that I can be able to matriculate into college or the next grade level. But now strategic compliance is not in alignment to what our students need. Generation Alpha, Generation Z, they always stated they want purposeful, they want authentic work, relevant, as you stated, as opposed to just going into school and fulfilling a grade. Feedback loops, so important to close. This was another great answer to my audience. Please rewind that. But Danelle, this is the last question. You made it through VFE. Congratulations. I just missed the coffee. That's it. And we've been recording our conversations. Now we got it on video. But last question, I don't know if I can limit you. I'm going to try, but I don't know. But I'm inferring that you're probably going to expand on this question. But what three words, Danelle, and it's only three words, but take it as it is. What three words do you want today's audience to leave our podcast with regarding a future-focused model for Generation Alpha and Generation Z in the AC stage of education?
I'd say number one's curiosity. Mm-hmm. Let them be curious. Let them ask questions. I think that's what a lot of times kids ask. Why do we have to learn this? They don't understand the relevance. But when you tap into their curiosity, it's amazing what they come up with or what they think. I'm always just fascinated to talk to young people. And I'd say empowerment, empowering them once they are curious, empowering them to move and have action on that, because curiosity in itself isn't going to change the world. We have to somehow empower them to now try some of these things, and that failure is not a bad thing. It's okay. Yeah. Let's try something else. And I'd say the last one is be innovative. Don't be so stuck. I see a lot of mistakes with AI tools. Like, we created an AI tool that creates more worksheets.
We don't.
Right?
Yeah. I think that's before the BC stage of education, right? We're going back to the Aguirre stage of education.
Right. And so don't just, you know, I think of the SAMR model. We don't just want substitution of the things that we've done. Truly let them be innovative and try some things that we haven't tried before. Because we're going to be pleasantly surprised. I can tell you, after doing this work, continuous improvement work, for 15 years, you will be pleasantly surprised at some of the innovation that comes from, you know, teachers, students, parents, because sometimes they're not so bogged down with the compliance things that they have ideas that you're like, oh my gosh. And then you have to say, why can't we? Who do we have to talk to find out if we can do this? But you do have some leaders that are really now beginning to, you know, open that box and say, let's try something different. And that's where I can come in and help them really rethink what are their priorities, and then help them start to build some leadership pipeline at this. We want to leave educators in a place where they're able to solve their own problems, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Danelle. Curiosity, empowerment, and I love it. Be innovative. Four words, but necessary for Generation Z, Generation Alpha. Danelle Almarez, thank you so much for coming on VFE. And for my audience, if they want to get in touch with you, talk to you with regards to their leaders, practitioners in your area of expertise, continuous improvement, AI, how would they be able to get in touch with you?
Oh, LinkedIn's the easiest way. So just Danelle Almarez, all A's, A-L-M-A-R-A-Z on LinkedIn. And you can book a call so that we can talk and, you know, let me come in and help. Let me hear what your problems are and let me see what I can do to assist or point you in the direction of someone that can, because this is going to require collaboration. The changes we have, we need lots of collaborators, because it's going to take all hands on deck.
Absolutely, Danelle. Thank you so much. And like I said, all the way from New York, I have been admiring your work from afar. Thank you. We have to have now another conversation, because there are some points I want to extend upon, because I learned from this episode. So yeah, there will be a part two and then a part three and four as well. But Danelle, you're one of the, I like to say, impactful and influential thought leaders in our country. Thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.